Hey Shabbat, Monday the 10th of January, Dr. Sholem Springer, My Word is My Bond and the Stature of Man. This week's Torah Way has been sponsored by Family G. Klein, the Chovet Simchas Hanasurim, Shel Pini Isler and Esther Dunner.
Thank you very much. Good morning to you all. I'd like to start with a vault from my Rebbe, Rabbi Avrom Gurevitz. He has a collection of ideas about the Haggadah, and one of them, which he quotes from his father, goes as follows. It's on the statement, Kama malos toibus lemokam aleinu, where then follows with Dayenu, and this is, of course, a collection of statements of how wonderful HaKadosh Baruch Hu has been to us. And Rabbi Avrom quotes his father, picking up the word Oleinu, in the whole of Shas, apparently, Oleinu is always Yotso Shtar Choyv Oleinu. It always implies some sort of choyv, some sort of obligation. So similarly here, Kam Malas Tovus Lamokam Oleinu also has an implication of an obligation on our part. And he develops a whole theme, which he explains to us, that all the Tovus that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for us, they have a corresponding and a reflexive obligation that devolves upon us. So they go hand in hand. Tovus HaRiboshon does for us, and the obligations that we have to him. And he explains it in terms of a Chodesh Avovus, which explains that the Kohenim have got more duties than the rest of us. They've got the Avoider to do. They've got more duties because they have the Matonus. They've got 24 matonas that the rest of Klal Yisrael do not have, and therefore their duties are greater than the rest of Klal Yisrael. And with that, he also wants to explain a Malbim. The Malbim explains that in Hallel, we say, Hallel Hashem Kol Goyim, Shavchu Kol Umim. And then, after that statement, which is a general statement, it then says, Hoidu Lashem Ki Toiv. The Goyim say, Hoidu Lashem Ki Toiv, which is a thank you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the Toivus. But then it goes on to refine it and says, Yoimeno Yisrael. Yisrael have more obligations to our Kodesh Baruch. We get more tovers, therefore we have more obligations. Yoimeno Yisrael. And then it goes on to refine it even more. Yoimru, no, base Aaron, the Kohenim have an even greater number because they have these matonas, as we just explained from the Chovos Avovos. And finally, Yire Hashem. The Yiri Hashem, which he explains, are the Geirim. The Geirim we've seen, the Pchisas Amim, the fact that the Goyim live in such a degraded state, and he has sort of seen the light, as we say, and come on board. Therefore, the Toiva that has been done, that a Geir can join, is greater than everybody else, and therefore he is the culmination of that particular list. So we see that the response is proportional to the gifts that we get. Now, in Haggadah, there is a machlokus, a three-way machlokus, whether there were 50 makkas at the Yam, whether there were 200, Beleza says there were 200 makkas, Rabbi Kiva says there are 250. What's all this about? What's the explanation of there being, what is the difference, in fact, whether there were 50, whether there were 200, whether there were 250, why does that make a difference? On the basis of what we just said from Rabbi Avrom Gurevitz, it's understandable, because what he's suggesting is that Rabbi Eliezer, who says that they're 200, 200 corresponds to the mitzvah saseh. Mitzvah saseh. So they're 200 mitzvah saseh, and therefore we have to be thankful because there were 200 nisim, 200 nifloys at the Yam Suf, and therefore we are obligated in those 200 different ways with 200 mitzvah saseh. I lemaisa, we always learn that there aren't 200, but there are 248. Keneged the Ramach Evorim. And he explains that, yes, it's true, that there are 248 mitzvahs asay, keneged the Ramach Evorim, that's quite true, but 200 are individual, and the 48 are public, general mitzvahs, and we are thanking God for it on an individual basis, and therefore it just picks up the 200, the corresponding to the 200 nisim that the Kodesh Baruch Hu did at the Yom Suf. Then finally we come to Rabbi Kiva holds that there were 250 nisim at Yam Suf, and he explains that what's going on is this. He picks up not only the individual mitzvah, say the 200, but also the other 48. So Rabbi Akiva reckons that there are 248 magefas at Mitzrayim, and therefore at Kriyas Yam Suf. And therefore, what we're talking about is 248 mitzvos aseh. Well, the Rabbi Akiva says 250. Yeah, 250. There are two missing. There are two missing from the cheshbon. There are 248 mitzvos aseh obligations, but there are 250 magefas and mitzrayim. So where is the correspondence? He explains the following. And this leads into our shir. So all that is a hadoma of the shir. There are two mitzvahs that don't need to be written, that aren't mentioned. And even among the Sheva mitzvahs b'nei noach, they're not mentioned. Those two mitzvahs are as follows. And that completes 248 plus 2 is 250. What are these two mitzvahs that don't need to be mentioned? And they are, one, Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, that you believe in the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because without believing in the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nothing begins. Yeah, no mitzvahs, nothing, there's no Torah. Yeah, that is a fundamental, it's a given. And the other one is the idea that a man keeps his word. That is such a fundamental, it doesn't need to say it in the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. Because if we don't have that, if the world doesn't have that, if a person doesn't keep his word, then nothing begins, nothing starts. And for example, when we said Nasi B'nishma, we were not yet B'nai Yisrael. We weren't yet the B'nai Yisrael that we are today. We weren't B'nai Yisrael, so we were saying it as B'nai Noach. So if there wouldn't be such a idea or such a klal which underlies everything, which is fundamental to everything, which is that a person keeps his word, then what would our Nase V'Nishma have been worth? Nothing at all. So there is this concept. It's unwritten, unsaid, but understood by everyone that keeping your word, my word is my bond. And as somebody just told me just a few minutes ago before the shir, picking up on the my word is my bond, I hope I won't mess it up. He says about this magician that waved around a parrot, and with that parrot he cast this spell over the people, and he said to the people, my bird is my wand. So we've established that keeping one's promise, keeping one's word, is a fundamental so very deep that it doesn't even have to be listed among the 248 mitzvos aseh. It's something that is inherent in everything that we do. This leads us.
Not listed.
Well, it is Moitzev Sechet Tishma. In the Torah it is. For us it is Moitzev Sechet Tishma. So it's you know, it is there, but for B'nai Noach it's not there at all. So where is our obligation in Nasa Nishma, which comes before we heard the words Moitzev Sechet Tishma? It's this underlying idea that a person keeps his word, otherwise the world doesn't turn. I mean, nothing happens at all. The shir is based on the writings of Rav Huttner in Pachad Yitzchok. And this is in his Sefer on Pesach, Mama Ayin Tes. And we begin with the Pasuk in Devorim. And the Pasuk in Devorim says this way. It's in Hazinu. And the Pasuk tells us, Behanchel Elyon Goyim, when the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is being manchil the world, b'hafridoi b'nei Adam, and Rashi tells us what that means, when he separates mankind, that k'shehefitz doi haflogo, when the Rabbeinu Shel Olam separated, scattered the doi haflogo, hoya b'yodo l'avir min olam, it was in his capability, in his gift, so to speak, to actually eradicate them. You know, they were rebelling against the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and therefore, possibly the right thing would have been to eradicate them. He didn't do that. It says, V'lo yoso kein, elo yatzev gubulois amim, that's the end of the pasuk, yatzev gubulois amim, he's mekayim, the boundaries of peoples. And here is a surprising sentence or phrase, l'mispar b'nei Yisrael, according to the count of the b'nei Yisrael, Zok Rashi, Bishvil Misbah B'nai Yisrael. So in other words, the 70 nations correspond to something in Klal Yisrael, to some count, some number in Klal Yisrael. So, L'misbah B'nai Bishvil Misbah B'nai Yisrael, She'asidim Lotzeis Mibnei Shem, that in the future will derive from Shem, U'l'misbah Shivim Nefesh, Shel B'nai Yisrael, She'yod Mitzrayim. So in accordance with the 70 souls that went down to Mitzrayim, So HaKadosh Baruch Hu established the Gevurah Yisamim, those 70 nations, after the Doi HaFlogah, and there is therefore a correspondence between the two. There's a connection between the 70 souls of Klal Yisrael and the 70 nations that were split at the time of the Doi HaFlogah into those 70 nations after the building of the Tower. Now, what we need to find out is, what is the connection? Where is the connection between those two? But there is a connection. In other words, that division of those nations into 70 is rooted into something that happened in the future. What will happen in the future is that 70 souls will go down to Mitzrayim. That already has, so to speak, a retrospective effect in the fact that all the nations are established with their boundaries in accordance with that number. Now, we learn in Bava Metzia, and surely in so many other places in Shas, that if a person does a deal with somebody else, I buy something, and I pay over the money, but I haven't yet done a Mashiach, I haven't actually done a Kinyan on the thing that I'm buying. Peiris. The Gemara's example is Peiris. A person's buying a whole load of fruit, and he pays over the money, and presumably does a handshake on it. A deal is a deal. And at the last minute, before he does the actual Kinyan, he changes his mind. Now the Gemara says that the Chazorah actually is valid. He can change his mind before he's done the act of Mashiach. You can do it. However, it comes at a very large price. Yochai Lachzoyah, says the Gemara, you can change your mind. Aval Omru Chachomim, but our Chachomim have said about a person who does this at the last minute, when everything has been done, all the deal has been done, and just minus one point. Alright, it's an important point, the Kinyan. But nevertheless, it's understood by everybody that the deal is going to go through, and at the last minute he changes his mind. Chazal say, Misha Poro Mianshe Doi HaMabel. The one who paid the people of the Doi HaMabel who were Roshoim and visited them with an enormous plague and klolo, Umeanshe Doi HaFlogo, and similarly there, the one who paid off the people at the Doi HaFlogo, visited them with a klolo, who osid li poro l'misha ina oimad b'dibura. He will also in the future pay off this man who doesn't keep his word. So in other words, the Chazorah helps, Medina, yeah, then he can actually go to court and he'll win. Yeah, I'm Chayza from the deal, fine. But the fact is that this klola, the Misha Pora, as we call it, the Misha Pora descends upon him. So even though Medina it helps, then Bottle Hamecha indeed, but the klola of the Chachomim is bound up with that Charota. One should know, says the Chachomim, that if you mischarit at that sort of particular juncture, you should know that you bring upon yourself, a person brings upon himself, that this is the price you will have to pay. Now, what the Gemara has just told us is that the klola that we are talking about, this Misha Pora, is an extension of the klola of the Doi HaMabul and the Doi HaFlogo. Right? Misha Pora, who paid off, who punished the people at the Doi HaMabul and Doi HaFlogo, the same one will punish this person. So notice we are extending, we are stretching the klola of the Doi HaMabul and Doi HaFlogo onto this person who is Chayza B'Diburo, who goes back on his word. I think in the diamond bourse all over the world, the person shakes hands, and you know what they say, Mazel Lebrocha. Mazel Lebrocha, that's it. You go back on a Mazel Lebrocha, on a handshake, and you probably never do business in the bourse again. I think that's the rule. Basically, a word is a word. Yeah, this is understood. So, this klola, this Misha Pora, descends on this person. Okay, and it comes from, it is an extension of the Doi HaMabul Doi HaFlogo. Frekhev Hutna. We don't have enough klolas. We don't have, you know, other places to draw on. We've got whole pages of Teichocho. You've got klolas all over the place. You have to go back, literally, to the Ark. Yeah, you have to go back in time, that far, and schlep a klola that a Kodesh Baruch Hu and Doi HaMabul Doi HaFlogo in order to curse this man. And there are other klolas that a Chachomin could have, so to speak, constructed or drawn. There's something unique. There's something unique about the particular klolas of the Doi HaFlogo and the Doi HaMabul. And in order to understand the sort of the parts which we said in the title was that my word is my bond and the stature of man, let's just talk about the stature of man. Let's talk about that part of the title for a few moments. We go right back to the beginning of the world, Adam Rishon and his chet and his punishment. Well, we all know that beginning Adam Rishon lived in Gan Eden and then he was put in the world that we live in. And the punishment that Adam received and the legacy, of course, that we have to live with, the Chachomim put it this way. What Adam HaRishon underwent was a miut suras Adam, a diminution, a reduction in the stature of man. And we learn the Sforim tell us, the Midrashim tell us, the Bedesla brings it, and others bring it, the Chaim Volozhin brings it, of these Midrashim, and they work out the whole idea of the Chet, etc. But we know that Adam HaRishon was a man of great stature, with such great stature, that he could see me Sofa Olam Lad Sofa. Yeah, that's the Lachna Medrash. I mean, he wasn't a very tall man, physically, possibly, but the idea of that he could see me Sofa Olam Lad Sofa Olam, from one end of the world, is Hasoga. His understanding of the Rebbeinu was so great, that we can't be Masig at all. And the Medrash actually says, and concludes there, that after Adam HaRishon died, his heels... After he died, his heels, which is the lowest point of a person, his heels outshone the sun, so to speak, spiritually speaking. So we can imagine, by, reverse engineering, we can work out what this man must have been when he was alive, and of course we're not talking about his heels anymore. Even his heels outshone the sun after his death. So we're talking about a man, a person created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who has HaSogas Mesofa Oilam HaTsofai, for one end, in other words, something very, very superlative. Incredibly high. And after the Chet of Adam HaRishon, he goes through this miut tsuras Adam, his stature is now reduced. And that was the first case of reduction of the stature of man. That's our first example. So, taking a leaf out of that book, we also know that at the time of the Doya HaMabul, and indeed the Doya Flogor, that humanity also undergoes a reduction of stature. There are psukim. It says in the case of the in the case of Mabul, Honiach Olav HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kapu Miyutoi, and in Doya HaMabul and Doya Flogo, we have Lo Yodoin Ruchu Ba'odom B'Shagam Hu Boso. The Rebbeinu Shalom says, "I will not judge man. B'Shagam, I understand that he is flesh." In other words, there is a recognition in the Pasuk that he isn't as great as he was. He is flesh and blood, and therefore he will not be judged in the same way, because he's now smaller. And maybe the actual Pasuk that tells it all, Oisiv Lekalil Oides Adomo. The Rebbeinu Shalom says, I'm not going to curse the earth anymore. You know, with Kayin and with other cases in the Torah, the Rebbeinu Shalom made a change to the world in accordance with the behavior of man. Certainly in the case of Adam, that's certainly so. And in other cases as well, early on in our Torah. And then the Rebbeinu Shalom says, I'm not going to curse it. I'm not going to change nature anymore because of man's behavior. Because man has evil in him, and that's the way he's going to behave, and therefore there will be no more reductions. So these psukim, that man fell in stature at the Mabul, tell us that there was a reduction. After Adam HaRishon, there was a second reduction at the Mabul. And indeed, the third case of the reduction of stature of man is at the Doya HaFlogo. That's an easy one. Because before the Doya HaFlogo, everybody was Besofa Achas of Dvar HaMachodim. Everybody was speaking the same language. We were completely unified. Now, we all know the Targum, on the first we learned the Psukim about the creation of Adam, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is creating Adam, it says, Vayipach Ba'apov Nishmas Chaim. He took earth, and Vayipach Ba'apov Nishmas Chaim, he blew into him a neshama, and the Pasuk says, Vayi Adam Lenefesh Chaya, and man became a living being. Now, I put it to you, gentlemen, that there were lots of living beings already, so what's the big chiddush? What's the chiddush? Vayi Adam Lenefesh Chaya. There were animals running around all over the place when Adam HaRishon was created. And the Targum gives the answer. Everyone quotes this Targum. Everyone knows this Targum. A speaking being. So man's greatness, or certainly over the animals, but per se, man's greatness lies in the fact that he is a speaking being. And it's not just he makes clicks and noises and buzzes like the animals do. They do communicate in some way. Man can actually speak and rationalize and argue and make moral choices and all the rest of it that goes with speaking. We're talking about speaking that raises man to his stature. So the great stature of man is given by the fact that he can speak. He can communicate. Now, obviously, therefore, when there was a change in the Doya HaFlogo between mankind that was fully communicative, that means everybody could speak to everybody, and then later on, after Doya HaFlogo, people couldn't speak to each other anymore, that constitutes a reduction in the stature of man. Because no longer our greatness has now been reduced. We can't communicate, you know, an Irishman meets a Frenchman, and he can't communicate with each other anymore. Well, they can't maybe now today either, but... Okay, so the fact that there was this division in languages means that that was a reduction in man. So we have these three cases. Odom, do I mabul, do I flogo? We're talking about a diminution or reduction in the stature of man. Now, the fact is this, that the effect on man's stature, man's status and standing, stops there. After this, when the Ribbono Shel'Olam punishes mankind, he no longer will reduce his stature. From now on, says Rafutna, we're talking about a world where Rishoyim are punished, yes, but they're punished physically, either they're given pain, or they're given death, or whatever, there will be punishments, but no longer will it affect us as human beings, the character of the human being. So, that's the end of it, so to speak. So now we understand why the klola of a man who does not keep his word harks back, connects up with the doya haflogga and the doya hamabel. Because let's just think about what we're doing, what a person is doing when he doesn't keep his word. You know, words, as we've just said, are very powerful. And we've got lots of halachas. Chofetz Chaim's written a whole sefer about not telling lashon hara, leitzonos, nivel peh, and all the rest of it. You know, we can misuse language. Language is very, very powerful, and it can be misused in a very powerful way. But you don't affect language as such. When a person says a lashon hara, then he's using the power of language for the wrong purpose. And there are lots of them, the list that I've just given. But when someone doesn't keep his word, he's doing something entirely different. What he's doing, he's devaluing the power of language. In other words, I use words, I make a promise, I don't keep it. So all of a sudden, the words don't mean anything anymore. In the language of Rav Huttner, he says, you've made language into samatut, which we say is ashmata. You've made reduced language to a shmata. You say something, you make a promise, you don't keep it, so the words are worth nothing. So the whole stature of man has now been reduced again when a person says something, makes a promise, and doesn't keep his promise. So we understand very well that now this is an example. It's true that Revelation doesn't punish us globally in that way. The person's done it to himself. He's reduced mankind by not keeping his word. And therefore we've got to borrow the klolos of the doya mabul and the doya flogga, which are examples of just that. Now we understand it perfectly, why the two connect together. So a person takes the chashivas out of language, that's quite different from lashon hara, which is using the chashivas for wrong purposes. And we can take a leaf out of the ideas that we say at slichus, you know, we've got a whole list of things, misha honor, es elio baha kamol, hu yaneni. You got this, so we're saying that in the same Ribbono Shel Olam who answered Eliyahu, please use that same technique or those same graces onto me. So we're borrowing that. And similarly here, the Misha Pora, Anshe Doyen Mabul, Doyen Flogo, he should visit his curse on this person because they're doing basically the same thing. So this is the idea of a person keeping his word and not keeping his word. Now I'm very conscious of the time, and what I want to say is this: the shiur is a little bit longer than this. And I could finish off with this, but because we are in the Sedras, and this week is Shabbat Shira, I just cannot leave without telling you something else about language. As I say, I would have liked to finish off with something else, as because the Shia of Rav Huttner in that particular Mama is a little bit longer, but I will now move over, because we made the actual point. More points can be made, but we made the actual point, and I think you've got the idea. Let me just tell you something about language, since we're talking about the subject of language, in how it connects up with this week's Seder, with Ozzy Oshim Moshe in particular. Now, the fact is that Chazal tell us that when a person, when a nation sees the Mapola of the Goyim, then there is a special mitzvah to sing Shira. It goes together. You see Mapola of Goyim, then there is a mitzvah to sing Shira. We've got Shira's Devoira, we've got other Shirois in the Torah, and one of the kings is actually criticized for not singing a Shira. So it goes hand in hand. Mapolos Hashorim, Shira. And the question is why? And Rav Huttner says the following in a different Shira. He says the following, a very, very nice idea. And he says that, you know, when we talk about, when the Torah talks about the creation of man, the Torah talks about and tells us a story about material which is offered in our domo. He infuses him with an neshama. And then the Targum tells us, as we learned before, they becomes a speaking being. So Rav Huttner says, what's going on here is a bit of chemistry. We've got material offered in our domo. We've got neshama, which is pure spirituality. When you fuse together material and spiritual, the result is speech. chemistry. Material plus spiritual equals speech. That's the beginning of Ma. Now, we live in a world which Chazal call Alma de Shikra. Alma de Shikra means, you know, things aren't real. You think they're real, they're not real. For example, one of the things that we have to live with in this world is this contradiction that Moshe Rabbeinu was so troubled about. Tzadik v'ra loy, Rosh v'tov loy. But we have to live with it. You know, we get used to living with that sort of thing. We see wonderful people, fantastic people, and they live miserable lives, and for care we see people who are not very good, yeah, maybe much, much less than good, and everything goes for them, they're wealthy, they're healthy, etc., everything goes. And this was a contradiction, Hareini Nos Kvoidecho, Hareini Nos Drachecho, said Moshe Rabbeinu, both those things, and Chazal tell us whether he did get the answer, whether he didn't, some of folks were showing him. The fact is, Moshe Rabbeinu was troubled by the fact that we live in an Alma de Shikra, that things are not as they should be, or they, according to us, should be. But we get used to it. But what is our basic belief? Our basic belief is this. Okay, things look like that down here. Tzadik v'ra loy, Rosh v'tov loy, is exactly as the world seems to turn here. And we live with it either acceptingly or cynically. But we do believe, don't we, that in the Olam HaEmes, in the Olam HaRuchni, there things come right. There is going to be Tzadik v'tov loy, and it's going to Rosh v'ra loy. That we firmly believe. So therefore, you know, we don't always see the Olam HaRuchni. Now let's picture the scene at the side of the Yam Suf. There are the Egyptians, there are the Eden, and the Egyptians are drowned in the Yam Suf. Now all of a sudden, we have got a vision of Rosh v'ra loy. Now Rosh v'ra loy is not usually something we see in this world. Such a manifest, such a dramatic case of Rosh v'ra loy we never see. It's only individuals perhaps, but on such a national, sort of global scale, that's the sort of thing we see in Olam HaEmes. That's the sort of thing you see in Olam HaRuchni. So Rav Hutton explains. So what have we got here in our picture? We've got me, a gashmistic person, material, and all of a sudden, for a few moments, a window has opened, and I am connected to the Olam HaRuchni. So you have again the Gashmis connected to the Ruchnis. Now let's get out of our chemistry sense. You remember what we said? When material and spiritual combine, out comes speech. Ruach Mamalala. So therefore what we've got here is a combination of the material man seeing all of a sudden Rosh v'ra loy, and that's something that usually happens in Yenabel, therefore he's got a vision for a few moments in Olam HaRuchni, they're connected, and out should come speech, but not just ordinary speech, but speech of the most superlative sort, indeed, shiro, poetry itself. I'll leave you with that idea. I wish you all a good day and a good day.